everybody. It is the Context Machine. Welcome to episode 627. I'm Brian. I'm going to get this down, Jeff. Any day now. I'm going to get this down. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamet, Brian Chaffin's emotional support animal. Hey, check us out at it still says our new home. We've been in there long enough that we've unpacked the boxes. Yeah. Contextmachine.io.
Yeah, that's a good thing there. And you can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us. You can find us on Post on News and Mastodon at Context Machine. I for what it's worth, I am on Blue Sky and Threads at Geektales.
Same.
And Post. And Mastodon at Geektales. I'm at Geektales everywhere.
I'm Jay Gamet everywhere.
Right. Good for us.
Well, thanks for joining us for the show this week. It's been lots of fun. Basis was provided by Dr. Boom.
Before we go,
oh,
we could maybe talk about some things. I'm just saying. Just a little.
That's so crazy. It just might work.
It just might work. So the first thing I thought that we could talk about is the fact that, and I'm going to pitch this in an entirely Brian appropriate way. I thought we could talk about how much I'm enjoying season two.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Season two, it's good.
You didn't say season two of what? And I'm not going to just wonder.
Foundation. I thought I did. The show Foundation on Apple TV.
Haven't heard of it.
Yes, you have.
Kidding. I'm enjoying season two as well. I also enjoyed season one.
I didn't enjoy season one as much. I don't know. I'm kind of wondering if it's... okay. We have often talked about how filmmakers and TV showmakers should not screw with great books. Well, in my opinion.
Okay. I'm with you. Yep.
You know, great books should only be changed for film and TV if it truly improves the story, in my opinion. Right? We've talked a lot about that.
We have talked about that.
Unbeknownst by our listeners, you have had to listen to me talk about that even more than they have. So go ahead.
I'm sure this comes as a major shock to our audience.
Yes.
Yeah. Brian, my take is gratuitously changing the content from book to screen. That kind of sucks. However, I appreciate that telling a story in print versus telling a story on screen, there are changes you have to make simply because it's a different medium. And
yes.
And so doing that where it's necessary because of how you tell a story in a different medium, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's the changing the story that really ticks me off when it's a great book. Again, my examples of that would be don't mess with the Lord of the Rings. Don't mess with the Game of Thrones, for instance. Don't mess even with the Chronicles of Narnia. But at the same time, the Holcroft Covenant, a fine book by Robert Ludlum from the 70s, where the film version starred Michael Caine, and in the first 5 minutes, they wiped out the first half of the book and made his love interest and his sister into one character.
Okay, now see, that's a problem.
Well, but no, it's not a problem because it's the Holcroft Covenant. Who cares?
Yeah, well, wait. I'm sorry. I misunderstood because I was thinking, you realize what I was thinking now, right?
No.
That they made his sister his love interest. And I realized that's not actually what happened.
Right. They combined his sister into his love interest.
Right. So two characters, another one character. He's not Leia kissing Luke in
Hoth. And again, they wiped out half the book in the first 5 minutes. And that was okay to me because it's the Holcroft Covenant and it was a fine book, but it's not a great book in my opinion. And everybody's opinion.
So anyhow, that's how I feel about Philip K. Dick.
Okay. Like, I mean, do tell.
Oh, you actually went exposition? Wow. Okay. Here's the deal. My word isn't good enough for you.
Well, no, it's not. Go.
All right. So anyhow, Philip K. Dick, he came up with a lot of really interesting and compelling story ideas. His execution, I think, was lacking. But when you get talented people that could take these concepts he created and then turn them into something for television or the big screen, you get stories that are actually much better than what he had originally written.
I completely agree with that. Philip K. Dick was a terrible writer with great ideas. And he was a terrible writer for a number of reasons, one of which he was writing sci-fi in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And sci-fi in the 60s in particular tended to be awful writing. And just not good writing at all. His ideas for stories were amazing. And that's probably and possibly, and again, probably because he was schizophrenic. He was, I'm not just calling him schizophrenic. The man was schizophrenic. And mm-hmm. that schizophrenia really kind of imposed itself through his writing. That's why so many of his stories deal with what is real and what is not real. That totally comes from his schizophrenia. And those make great stories. And so but the writing was so bad that I completely agree with you. It is entirely okay for a screenwriter to take these concepts and to change them up. Make them work. Yeah.
Yep.
But
yep.
The Lord of the Rings, don't change it. I mean, like if you're going to cut something out, that's one thing. But changing stuff, I feel rather strongly about this.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So back to Foundation. Isaac Asimov, the writer of the Foundation books, was a visionary, great ideas, also not a great writer, and mostly because he was writing in the 60s and 50s. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever said this on the show. There is one science fiction book that was written in the 60s that I think stands up to a modern read, and that's the first Dune book, which came out in 1966, I think. And it's about the only sci-fi book that really stands up to a modern eye. And most of these other books, most of these, like Stranger in a Strange Land, is, I think, a great book, but I also feel like you have to suspend your disbelief in the writing. Like you have to be able to take the misogyny, the chauvinism and just the lack of finesse that is represented in writing today, which has had decades to become better.
I'm with you. Yep.
So anyway, Foundation. I feel like Isaac Asimov had amazing ideas like PKD, like Philip K. Dick, but that his writing left a lot to be desired. And I don't mind when Foundation strays from the source material. And I'd like to point out that I realize that I'm being freaking arbitrary as hell. I realize that. And I'm completely okay with for anyone who wants to take me to task for that. I mean, they're wrong, But I don't mind anyone having a problem with me being arbitrary as hell. And to I also acknowledge the fact that my definition of a great book may not be your definition of a great book, or, you know, someone else's definition of a great book.
Yeah. Well, when we're looking at content like this, entertainment content, mm-hmm. of course, it's completely subjective.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I read Foundation, I mean, it was way long ago. So there, for me to be able to really look at what they've done with season one and what they're doing with season two, and pick out things where I'm like, wow, this is way different from what I remember. I'd have to go back and reread I probably should, but, I like the way they're presenting the story on screen, and I appreciate that there are changes you're going to have to make if you're going to take a book that covers hundreds and hundreds of years, and the way at least parts of the story are presented, it's almost like vignettes. How do you make that work as a weekly TV series? Spanning multiple seasons, and you're going to have to make changes. And the changes they're making, at least based on what I remember, I'm totally fine with. I really enjoyed season one, like I said, and I'm enjoying season two even more.
Fair enough. So I didn't even mention the changes from the standpoint of complaining about the changes they were making. It's more like that was not the source of my complaint, that they'd made changes for it. I just felt like season one was a little disjointed and I didn't really like the way they were presenting it. But I kind of watched it, you know, honestly, out of like a sense of obligation to the books.
I don't even understand the words you just said.
Seriously?
No.
Right. The sense of obligation. Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And I'm wondering, you know, Jane Espenson, who is from the Buffy world. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if she is a co-executive producer and a co-writer of several of these episodes. And actually, I don't know that she wrote them. I'm looking. Well,
just say it with conviction, and that makes it true.
IMDb is not going to. Oh,
Brian,
present this for me in a way that I need to get the information. But she is definitely.
I have something you need to know about.
Oh yeah,
I'm totally derailing us for a second.
Okay,
but you're going to appreciate this.
Yeah.
There's an app on iOS called Call Sheet.
Call Sheet.
Download the crap out of this. It is your replacement for IMDb, and it's superior in every way.
Awesome. Call Sheet.
Call Sheet. All one word. I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes.
Call Sheet, fine cast and crew.
I'm sorry, what?
Call Sheet, fine cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it has like a clapboard with a magnifying glass as the icon.
Yes.
Yep. It's a relatively new app, and you can use it for free. And I think it limits how many searches you can do. And then there's like a couple other features you don't get. And then when you pay, it's like $10 a year. It unlocks the whole thing. So it's unlimited searches. It even has a feature that they were clearly thinking about me when they created it. You can tell it to not show spoilers. So if part of the description of what you're reading includes a spoiler, it won't show that to you.
Huh. Okay. That seems fun.
Yeah. So anyhow, Call Sheet.
So she's definitely co-executive producer on season two. I don't know if she was co-executive producer before that. It doesn't look like it. And she's written 4 episodes, all in season 2. Yeah, I'm thinking that the change is bringing Jane Espenson on. Because she comes from the Buffy world. She comes from Joss Whedon's universe. She was a trusted lieutenant of Joss Whedon. And yes, I know that Joss Whedon has some complaints about him. I'm not going to address those. But I will say that Joss Whedon is the greatest storyteller on TV to this day, in my not at all humble opinion. And Jane Espenson was a part of his talent pool, and he really kind of brought her up too. So I'm thinking that it's Jane Espenson's presence in season 2 that has really kind of brought the show together.
So I hadn't looked into that, but what you're saying totally fits and makes sense.
Right. Now, I wish that I had looked this up. Oh, she wrote and produced 2 episodes of Caprica. You remember Caprica?
I really enjoyed Caprica.
She wrote...
to my surprise.
She wrote and created an episode of Warehouse 13. She wrote and produced 2 episodes of Dollhouse. She wrote 10 episodes of Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
And of course, she was on True Calling, too. She was a co-executive producer and writer. Anyway, the point is that I feel like she's the one who's brought this TV show together. And season 2 has been a lot less disjointed to me.
Okay. I'll go with you on that. And season 1 didn't feel disjointed to me to the same degree it did to you. However, season 2 feels like there is a better flow.
Okay. Better flow. Right. So how is that different from being not disjointed?
You can have something that doesn't flow as smoothly in one season versus another without it being disjointed.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. You described tomatoes as red, and I will describe them as red and round.
Why tomatoes?
It was supposed to be a takeoff on the tomato.
Oh, Brian, that was so clever.
No, it wasn't. It was really kind of stupid. So here's the deal. One of the things I've really liked about season 2 of Foundation is that I feel like the 3 actors that are playing the Emperor, Empire in terms of the show nomenclature, are doing a much better job. I mean, I don't know about it. It's them, but they feel much more grand, implacable. In public, the middle emperor, who is the current ruler, he moves very slowly and stately. And I love that.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I'm liking how Empire is being presented better in season 2 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. So we'd love to know what you think about Foundation. You out there.
Yeah. Both our listeners.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we're down to 1 now after this, after this episode.
Brian, stop scaring people off.
All right. So according to my notes, we're going to do something kind of weird for our second topic. We're going to talk about you. It's really weird.
We will figure out how to make it about you.
Okay, good. Excellent.
I believe in us.
Excellent. So my notes say that an iPad won't replace Jeff's laptop. And I stopped you right there because I didn't want to hear any more until we talked.
Okay. All right. So here's the deal. We've had discussions both on shows and just personally over the years where I've talked about how Apple is doing whatever thing with the next iPad or the next version of iPad OS, where they're getting me just so much closer to being able to use it as my primary computing device.
Okay.
But we never get there. And for years I kept saying, okay, look at everything they've done. This might be the year. And then it doesn't happen.
Then Lucy yanks the ball.
And I've come to the realization, it took me a while, but I seriously was in denial because I wanted this to be a thing. But I've come to the realization that it's never going to happen. Apple will never let the iPad reach the point where for many of us, it can replace the more traditional computer that we've been using, whether that's an iMac or a Mac Mini or a MacBook Air, or MacBook Pro, whatever. It will never be a true replacement. And I believe that is a very intentional decision on Apple's part. And so they will, in essence, keep the iPad hobbled so that it can't be that replacement.
Okay, I have to quibble. I was going to yell out balderdash at one point, but your further elucidations made me shift to quibbling instead.
Quibble away.
First of all, I think that you're right. I think it is probably a very deliberate line that they're walking. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like you should add a clarification to what you're saying along the lines of people like you.
Well, okay, that's fair. People like me.
Because I think that there are plenty of people who would be just fine without it with just an iPad.
And many of those people wouldn't have bought a Mac otherwise. But for those of us that have an actual need for a Mac, we will never be able to make that full transition into an iPad. It's not going to happen.
I mean, for instance, right now I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. I have 17 apps running, and that's just because I rebooted. And I need to flip back and forth between many of them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a thing that is very comfortable to do on a Mac and is next to annoying at the least to do on an iPad. And that's just one thing.
And see, and now that comes down to which iPad are you using and how are you using it. For me, having that many apps open on my iPad is no big deal because I'm using Command Tab to jump between them just like I do on my Mac.
Okay, but I've done that too. I don't think it's as easy to do on the iPad as it is on a Mac.
If you're not using a keyboard, it is not as easy to do on an iPad. If you have a keyboard connected to your iPad, Command Tab works exactly the same.
Okay, is this where we gloss over the fact that I don't have an iPad keyboard?
This is exactly where we're going to gloss over that and do the thing, the tomato red thing again, and I'll act like it's really clever. Go ahead and do it.
I can't even do that because to your point, I haven't tested it with a keyboard, but I feel like the mouse, the lack of a mouse on an iPad is going to also make this more complicated. It's at least the way I work.
Well, and see, that's another place where this is frustrating for me, because I use a keyboard with my iPad. I can use my Magic Trackpad or a mouse with my iPad. So I have full keyboard and mouse style input that I can do all the time with my iPad.
Okay, well then why don't you ditch your iPad, your Mac then?
Because the iPad is, I think, intentionally hobbled in such a way that it prevents me from being able to do
that. I am asking for specifics.
Okay, here's specifics. I use multiple audio input devices.
Okay.
Apple has made that very difficult to do on an iPad.
Yeah, all right. I'll give you that.
I use multiple audio output devices. That's difficult to do on an iPad. Connecting an external camera. But basically, if I'm doing some sort of web meeting or a podcast, my iPad is not the device that serves that purpose. And yet the hardware is capable of supporting all of this. It's a matter of actually letting us do it.
You know, I wonder if it is, and here's what I mean by that. The iPad has very specific and limited RAM. And software on a Mac, excuse me, on an iPad and an iPhone is very carefully constructed to make use of the limited RAM.
Okay.
And I am wondering if what you're talking about is more a byproduct of the limitations of software that need if this is more of a limitation based on the needs of making software have limited RAM usage.
Yeah, maybe. But that said, look at the professional level applications that are available on an iPad today, and then look at the built-in memory that you have, that RAM, 8 gig and 16 gig. Just like if you're buying a Mac.
Oh, I thought we were still at 8 on the iPad.
Hold on. Let's take a
look.
How
much RAM
iPad? I'm pretty sure it's 8 and 16.
How much RAM does 6th generation iPad have?
Well, 6th generation iPad versus iPad Pro would probably be different.
9th and 10th generation. Oh, yeah, fair enough. Well, we're making sausage here. Ah, here we go. How much RAM does each generation of iPad have? All right, here we go. 12, 6th generation, 8 and 16. You're right.
And keep in mind, when Apple was sending out developer kits for the first M series Mac, mm-hmm. it was an iPad in a Mac mini box.
So I'm kind of confused as to why you're saying this, because every time I push you for examples, you're making the case that you can use the iPad.
I should be able to use the iPad. The problem is I can't. There's a lot of things that I can do with my iPad, but there are certain things that it's just simply not going to happen. And podcasting is a big part of that.
Yeah, podcasting is But there are people who do podcast using their iPhones or iPads.
There are. Yeah. If we could do everything that we wanted to on an iPad, considering that in many cases you can buy an extremely powerful iPad for less than a Mac, why do we not use iPads instead of Macs? We can plug an external display into an iPad. We can use an external keyboard and mouse with an iPad.
So again, why are you arguing that you can't replace your Mac with an iPad?
Because I can't. It's, I mean, like I said, the podcasting part is big. And using multiple external drives with an iPad is a very cumbersome process. Not so on a Mac. It's unfortunate because,
I mean, it's not that I'm disagreeing with you, because I also don't, I don't think I could replace my computer usage with an iPad for even a second. I just, my problem is that I feel like I'm running into you a yes and response as opposed to no but.
So it's like we're doing an improv show.
Yeah, kind of, except for your improv is saying that I can't eat baked potatoes, but here's all the things I can do with the baked potato.
So my analogies, I cannot eat exclusively baked potatoes, even though here's all the other things I can do with it, with a baked potato. And yes, there's a lot that I can do with my iPad, and I like using my iPad.
Okay,
a lot.
What is a thing that you cannot do with your iPad?
Well, we've talked about my podcast recording.
Okay,
being able to use multiple audio inputs and outputs simultaneously.
But you could wait. You need to use multiple inputs when you're podcasting?
Yeah.
Why?
I've got a camera. I've got a microphone. Those are two inputs.
Right, I was thinking just audio inputs.
Yeah, camera's a big thing. I totally get why you wouldn't have thought about the camera, since we can see each other through the booth and don't actually need to use cameras when
right.
we're recording.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
is podcasting the thing that you can't do?
Podcasting, that's the big thing that I can't do. I shudder to, or I hesitate to talk about multi-window interfaces. But I have to talk about it a little bit. Okay, so a problem which Apple could have addressed already, but is choosing not to address it in a way that is truly functional for a wide range of users, is dealing with multiple apps and multiple windows simultaneously. That's a very cumbersome process on an iPad.
Okay, I agree with that.
Whereas on a Mac, I can have a jillion windows and jump between everything, and it's a much easier process. I'm not saying that I think that Apple needs to just run Mac OS with a full multi-window environment on an iPad, but the way they allow us to interact with multiple apps and multiple windows doesn't feel like it's at a point where it should be for the maturity of the product. And I don't think that's going to change in a meaningful way excuse me, and then also dealing with multiple external storage devices.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a big problem for me. Like right now, I have 6 external drives connected to my Mac. And then of course there's a NAS sitting over there, and trying to use the external drives that I use all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That would be a big problem. Okay. But there's no reason why it needs to be that way. Just from a technology standpoint, this has to be an intentional decision on Apple's part.
So it feels like Apple is solving these specific problems that we're talking about up to the point where casual users are fine and not further. And yes. And I think it's not just because of, I mean, one can certainly make the argument at this point, especially with the M1 processor, that, or the M2, are we at M2s yet? In the iPad? If the iPad Pro doesn't have an M2 processor, it'll have it this year. But not just from the standpoint of hardware, but also from the standpoint of making things too complicated for normals to do.
Well, that's a totally valid concern. But at the same time, don't make a, I mean, if something is too complicated for the average user, that's one issue. If it's something they need to do, but then when you're taking things that more advanced users are doing and you're implementing them in ways that make it very cumbersome, that's when we have a problem.
I suspect that it's the other direction, though, that this is Apple solving the problems up to the point where normal users are good and leaving the, somewhat more advanced to more advanced users to the Mac.
All right, well then, just get rid of the iPad Pro from the product lineup.
Why?
Because if you're going to give me a tool that's supposed to be a pro level tool.
But it is a pro level tool. It's a pro level tool in a number of ways. It's just not in all the ways that you need.
And
that's what I'm saying.
It appears to be hobbled in ways that keep it from being the true pro machine that people want it to be. Or in some cases need it to be. I double checked. Yes. The 6th gen iPad Pro is running an M2 processor.
Okay. Yeah. So certainly from a processing standpoint, you're right. The iPad could do everything, but I think that overall from the limitations of the form factor, that it makes sense for Apple to not try to cram everything that a Mac could do into an iPad and still call it a pro device. I think there are plenty of things that pros can do with an iPad. And I think that it's okay that it doesn't do everything that a Mac can do.
And Apple has created a very clear delineation between a tablet device user and a desktop or laptop user.
Yeah.
And obviously that's exactly what they've done.
Yeah.
And I get it from a business standpoint. However, at the same time, Apple has touted the iPad as a computer replacement, and that's not what they've given us.
Man, no. I I can't. This it's funny because your argument sounds like something that I would argue because I'm
I know this is dumbass. So weird. It's like we're arguing the opposite sides of this.
Yeah,
right now.
because I mean, if you have plenty of people for whom an iPad or an iPad Pro is a computer replacement, duh.
All right. I would love to see stats on how many people have successfully moved from using a Mac to just an iPad.
I mean, this is a complete guess, but I would guess that you have more people who have never bothered to use a computer who are using an iPad.
Younger people. I would venture to say there's many people who've never used a computer, but can do a lot of things with their iPhone.
Yeah, iPhone and iPad. I mean,
I'm betting it's more iPhone than iPad.
Oh, you could be right. I don't have access to young people currently.
The number of people younger than us, which I know is a very small demographic.
go ahead.
Anyhow, the number of people that I see younger than us that are doing a crazy amount of things just on their iPhone, is pretty high.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I do know people that have just a smartphone.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy to me, but yeah.
And at the same time, I don't know that many people that have just an iPad. Well, like iPhone and iPad.
Yeah, iPhone and iPad. Huh. Man, I would love to have access to Apple's data on this because I'm sure that they you know, have parsed the crap out of this data. And I'm sure that they have this data.
Oh, I would be shocked if they don't have this data.
Yeah, it would probably be a very valuable intelligence for their competition now, too, so they don't release it.
Yeah.
You know what we could do? We could listen to the last conference call and see if they mentioned anything, because they will occasionally give us tidbits.
Wait, they do conference calls?
Yeah, they did a conference call like 3 weeks ago, and we both blew it off.
Well, to be fair, we had really important things to deal with.
That actually is true.
See, for once I'm not just being a butt.
All right, man. Let me do this and say that is this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, you can write us at Podcast Machine. No. Context Machine Podcast @gmail.com. Any day now. Podcast at
Context, you and iPads, Brian.
Context Machine Podcast at gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Dr. Boom, recorded just for us. Right? Is that everything?
Yeah. I think you did a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so proud of you, Brian. Oh,
thank you. Yes. I can feel your something.
You can feel my bass.